From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 560, Cosmos DB Update, with guest Kirill Gavriluk, recorded Friday, November 17th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm here in New York at the Connect event, and I'm sitting with Kirill Gavriluk. Is that right?
Gavriluk. You got it right.
I got a couple of Y's in there. It doesn't make it an easy name.
Yeah.
And he's a principal dev manager at Microsoft working on the Azure Cosmos DB. And we had a few announcements this week about Cosmos DB. I think the big thing was the Cassandra API.
We did. That's indeed. Yes.
And
very excited about that one.
To me, it seems really, DocumentDB has been around for a while. And it had a certain level of success, but the sort of transformation to Cosmos DB with the different front ends on it, that the building an app based on MongoDB, I could be switching over now with Cassandra, same thing. I just have an option to switch. Is it literally that simple? Change the connection string?
It's indeed the switching from a Cassandra implementation on-premise to Cosmos DB with Cassandra API is indeed as easy as switching the connection string.
Nice.
What we're really excited about is the uniqueness of this approach of providing, instead of kind of basically hosting Cassandra in the cloud, but instead providing a protocol level fully compatible API on top of Cosmos DB, offers this service at no effort to you. You can basically reconnect your app to us, to Cosmos DB, by just switching connection string. And at the same time, offers the full power of Cosmos DB with turnkey global distribution, with elastic scale, on both storage and throughput independently. And other great things about Cosmos DB, it's that combination that is really attractive.
In a distributed data stores is one of those things we've all read about. Not that many of us have actually done. And I've spent some time trying to do a geo-distributed database. It's extraordinarily hard. Like, there's a lot of work involved in standing up multiple instances in multiple locations, maintaining that all that infrastructure to just have data be geolocated that way. So you guys are just taking that off the table for us.
Exactly. And it is indeed, I think the Cassandra one is where we got really excited about, because Cassandra is known to be a high-scale, great open source database for real-time data, right? Cassandra is known to support the distribution scenario.
Yeah, massive throughputs.
Massive throughputs. You can create clusters, and you can create replica clusters, but it's hard to use. If you're managing Cassandra clusters, you gotta get prepared that adding, it's not as easy as just, let's throw few more nodes.
No.
You have to tune config. You have to, adding a cluster takes time. Cosmos DB gives you those things as turnkey, just click a button on a map, and we take care of that for you.
And you do, I think you pay by locale that you select, like there is a sort of flat rate per, and then a transaction fee on top of that?
You pay it for the throughput. We are a managed service, but there is a spectrum of how managed can you be, right? You can be a managed service by just managing VM for someone,
right?
And it's a managed service, there's nothing wrong with it. Cosmos DB is a managed service in a much higher sense.
Sure.
Meaning that you tell us the throughput you need, and that's all you tell us. You don't tell us how many terabytes you're going to have. You don't tell us anything about CPU you need, etc. Just tell us what throughput you need, and we guarantee it.
And that's transactions per second or IOPS?
It's transactions per second.
Transactions per second.
It's a little more than, because every transaction is different, we have a currency called request units.
Okay.
That currency is, let's say, stronger than a dollar. Because the thing about this currency is that every transaction, for example, atomic read of 1K document costs one request unit.
Right. So that's sort of the measure.
That's a measure, right. An insert costs a little more because you can read from any replica, you can insert.
You have to insert
one, right?
To the root.
And insert in the master. So inserts cost a little more, but every operation has a cost. And that cost is static. It's cost one request unit today, tomorrow, until the end of time.
Sure. And if it's a 5K doc, then it's going to cost more request units.
a little more request to union.
Sure.
It's not linear. Like, it's weird. It's a lot more fair system than linear.
Right.
But, yeah. I mean, every operation has request units, and you specify your throughput in those request units.
Okay.
So then you can put 10 million request units per second. That's mm-hmm. 10 million requests per second of 1K documents.
So this is basically a dial of performance thing.
Exactly.
Do you need it to be this fast, or can you wait a little longer?
And you can, as the beauty is that, unlike VMs, which takes time to provision, deprovision, sure. add, remove, etc., and tuning config to reflect that, with Cosmos DB, it's an API call or a click of a button in the portal. Mm-hmm. And you can do it any number of times you want. So you can move up and down. Like, you want this hour, you want the throughput to be 10 million requests per second. Next hour, maybe you just need it to be 1,000 requests per second.
So I can actually vary my cost based on my needs at the time.
Exactly.
I'll only pay for what you use. In this case, it's throughput that you're paying for.
Yes.
So you could actually, so at my high times, I'm turning the knob up. Now, I mean, I guess the question is, if I've got the knob turned at 10,000 requests per second and I'm only pushing through 5.
So you still pay for 10.
I pay for 10. Yes, so there is a judgment call here about how much you need and whether you need to go faster. Now, if I have it set at 5 and I start trying to push 10, you're just going to restrict my pipe.
We're going to start throttling you.
Okay.
Yes. Throttle admission control is permissive. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to go a little higher.
Yeah.
Than,
you're going to be the beneficial
but
side.
But it's now you're taking risk. And you're taking a risk at what point we start throttling you, how we start throttling you.
Yeah. So, but this also speaks to, can I put some automation around this to decide that I have enough value that it's as if we're hitting that throttle, which I should be able to see in instrumentation, say, do we want to bump up for that additional cost? Like, is it worth it to us?
Exactly. Yes. We give you a variety of metrics, and you can either be reactive and look at the metrics of throttle requests,
mm-hmm.
or you can be proactive and look at the consumed throughput.
Right.
And make sure that it's below what you provision.
Yeah, run 10% ahead of it or something.
Just exactly.
So it just depends how sensitive you are to
mm-hmm. to throttle errors.
But if the price gets more efficient as the flow goes up anyway, the only thing that's going to make you unhappy is paying for capacity you're not using.
Yes.
As long as you can run ahead of that capacity, you're going to be fine. The transactional velocity is valuable to you. That your customer pays more, you sustain an SLA around that, or it's actually increasing revenue per hour.
Exactly. Yeah.
It really depends on the organization there. You're going to have to figure that out one way or the other.
Yep.
Is there automation mechanisms for adjusting that value? It doesn't have to be done with a GUI.
Yeah, it's an API.
Right.
It's a single API call.
Yeah. I could be coding this into my app.
Absolutely.
So, I guess my devs aren't keen on re-engineering my software, right? They're going to, we built this for Cassandra. Why would we switch from Cassandra? The only change they need to make is a connection string. And if they've done a good job, that's externally available to me as the IT guy anyway.
Yep.
And I can switch it myself. And then we can tinker with how are we going to deal with performance controls.
Exactly. It's a control plane that you probably will add logic over time.
Where do we talk to in the context of DR around this? Like, I guess you guys aren't going to break, right? Everything ever goes down?
As long as you have more than one region,
right?
It's a highly available system.
Mm-hmm.
So you can define your failover policies.
Mm-hmm.
You can set enable auto failover, which means that if we detect any anomaly in the data center, we're going to fail you over.
Sure.
You can fail over yourself.
Yep. If you're going to a further away data center, you're going to introduce some latency, but functionally you're the same.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. And reads, we always read from the nearest region.
Right.
It's the writes that by default, the writes go to one region.
Right.
There are patterns where you can enable multi-region writes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can even write into the region that's nearest to you.
More complicated, more expensive.
It's a bit more complicated. And people do interesting things. Like, for example, Azure Portal uses Cosmos DB.
Interesting.
Replicated across 24, 25 regions, I think, in mm-hmm. the public cloud. And it's replicated in everywhere, in every cloud instance, whether it's government or sovereign clouds. And for Azure Portal, they can detect where the sun is. You basically fail over following the sun.
Right. Of course.
This way you always know and optimized that your writes will be the fastest for where the most population is.
Where the most people, during the days when more people could be using the portal. So say chase it around. I mean, that's true. If I was doing an e-commerce case, same thing. I'd always try to keep the writes closest to, my primary business times, which for any given time zones, probably in the morning, in the afternoon kind of stuff. So yeah, you can get really interesting into, I want to tweak and tune and minimize latency.
Tune failover policies,
stuff I would never think about doing if I'd had to build all this infrastructure myself, because it's expensive. You know, I've got all my energy tied up doing that. The fact that you guys have done it mean that I actually have some cycles to say, can we optimize this at another level?
Yeah.
It's a really interesting case. I had not thought of that. What about taking snapshot for, you know, corruption backups, that kind of thing?
We take snapshots for you always.
Okay.
And we always maintain the last two snapshots. And we take it between 4 and 6 hours.
Okay.
We are working on offering it to you on demand. So you tell us.
Yeah, I kind of want to have a snapshot from last month and from last year, that kind of thing, just from the point of view of sometimes you don't detect a corruption problem for a while and you'd hate to have the snapshots you've got have now got whatever that error was propagated onto it and you want to get back.
It makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a common, so we're working on it. And you always have this functionality called change feed.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you can get transaction log and you can read from it.
Right.
As much. So you can go back in time yourself too if you have.
So it's like a transaction log.
Yeah. If you like, for example, if you have a read region,
mm-hmm.
let's say your one of the regions got corrupted. You still have other regions and you can read from the change feed and see down to the point where the data wasn't.
The point where they did the damage. Yeah.
And move back to that point.
Interesting.
So you have options, but of course we wanted to make it more usable, easy. So snapshots on demand is something.
Yeah, and sort of a recovery scenario. It says, okay, well, we're good up to this week, so I'm going to get you there. Yeah. And now you can continue on from there while I clean up that couple of days in between where I have to find the transaction that caused the problem. Like, you know, anybody using this, I think, is very sensitive to uptime.
That's true.
Even, you know, yeah, data integrity is important, but uptime with these kinds of velocity systems, it's like, how quickly can you get back up and making new money or serving the existing customers, and we'll clean up the mess sometime later. Can't be too long.
In case of the data corruption. And that's a thing where, because it's a real-time data, in many cases, like for these systems, real-time data is a very common scenario. And real-time data, you care about your data you really care about the data that is recent.
Mm-hmm.
Then you TTL it into some colder storage. And for those scenarios, because you're distributed and we have your last couple snapshots, you're safe.
Right.
But of course, you want to have more control over when exactly do we snapshot. So.
Yeah. Depends on the people, too. Some people are more controlling about that stuff than others, too.
That's right.
DR is an interesting conversation, depending on who you're working with. Some people are very precise about the way they want it. And some people are perfectly happy with, just make sure there's a backup, that we could somehow, you know, you'll get us back one way or the other. They're not specking all of the options. I mean, I have worked in organizations where they were doing a grandparent-parent-child rotation of backups and were very meticulous about each version of each thing cut off at the correct time.
But it's like that's a very important part, that there is no DR problem because it's a highly available system distributed.
Right. Anyway.
So you can always fail over.
Yeah, you should always have something up somewhere.
But if it's a self-made
that's only corruption is the thing that scares
that's tricky.
Me, right?
Yes, for that, you have to go back to the backups.
Well, and that's where all those great propagation mechanisms, like now we're propagating ugly everywhere.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we're very efficient.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's reality with some of these things. Although, I guess it depends on what kind of data you're storing here too. You know, more and more I'm working with organizations that are much more comfortable not worrying about RDBMSs. Like they're not wanting to decompose their data into rows and columns for everything. They're perfectly just store the invoice as an invoice whole. We'll parse it later for other purposes. So that is becoming the record of truth. And then there's many things that branch off of that for analysis purposes and execution purposes and so forth. But first and foremost, gather the data in the form that it came in and save it in a reliable way.
And that's the other benefits that people get. So they can, if they want richer queries. So with systems is Cassandra with wide columns, the data model dictates how rich can you get.
Right.
Cosmos DB started from the beginning with a richer data model.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's any basically JSON data model.
Right.
And so you can do pretty rich queries in real time as the data gets inserted. And you don't have to worry about schemas as you need to worry with some of the wide column solutions, etc. And you get the kind of true invention, like the interesting and interesting invention about Cosmos DB is this very low overhead indexing. So your queries stay fast as you can achieve arbitrary height.
So you're indexing within the document based on like tokenization around the JSON?
Yes, we do inverted index and we do inverted index for all paths. So it doesn't matter whether the document has that field or that particular path or not. All the paths are indexed by default.
Nice. Kiro, give me one moment here to pay the bills. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of our leading projects called AllReady focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time. HDBox is deploying this application in the field in the first half of 2017, and they need your help. Go to hdbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HDBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. And we're back. You're listening to Run As Radio. We're here in New York at Connect, talking to Carol about Cosmos DB and the latest updates to it. But for folks that have only ever lived with SQL Server, this is not a trivial migration to over to. Do you feel like there's good cases to be made for folks that are used to using relational for everything?
I think so. And of course, we're not saying that you should migrate every SQL database out there. There is SQL as a great database.
Sure. And then SQL Azure has, you know, multi-location, redundancy, failover. They have a lot of those same mechanisms. It just works differently.
Yeah. It's just that when you get to the scenarios where that starts probing you for thinking of moving to NoSQL, that's when Cosmos DB is a nice choice.
And I've certainly found in a lot of IT organizations, you only discover NoSQL at deploy. You know, the devs have done their thing. They've worked their own way. And yeah, they're storing a bunch of data their own way and trying to take that on. Like being a good steward of data, like being responsible and saying, how are we going to protect this data? To have these kinds of mechanisms where I can go, oh, I can put it up in Cosmos DB and no redundancy, minimal changes on the dev side. So they're not going to scream too loudly, given they're using one of the many APIs you support. That seems like a good answer rather than saying, oh, okay, well, now we have to incorporate a Mongo instance into our data architecture overall if we haven't got one already.
Yeah, and the fact that we offer you SQL API, basically we offer a variant of SQL that is optimized for document structures.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it's SQL.
But it is SQL.
Yeah, so your changes are not... what I observe is that, yes, we don't offer you full T-SQL.
Sure.
Right? For a reason. But scenarios that prompt you from moving off SQL or RDBMS databases over to something like Cosmos DB already dictate that move is not that hard.
Right.
Because you're probably not having super normalized data model. Yeah. You already moved past it because just your performance demands.
You're not trying to do 15-way joins.
Exactly.
Because you need that performance in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. So at that point, that switch is not as hard because you already set up you. The most common case is that, okay, because it's a very high throughput scenario and I have to have an index to be able to read the data, my throughput is becoming harder and harder.
Right.
So that's the time when, yes, I should probably switch to a system that does not have those constraints.
It's often I've found organizations where they've been wrapping SQL Server in various caching strategies and other tools and stuff to try and squeeze more performance out of it. So some points, like, you know, the strengths that existed in the relational database, you're effectively circumventing them for the performance.
Yes.
You should just get it out of the loop and go with these other storage mechanisms.
Yeah, there are these litmus tests, like your heuristics where, okay, now we're getting into the place where it's probably better to move.
Yeah, to go to something.
But you should not, like, it's not the answer that, oh, we should, NoSQL is rules, we should move everything.
No, SQL is a simply awesome don't system. Believe in the one right way.
Exactly.
There's choices for a reason. There's, you know, different instances in different places. But I've also seen people abuse SQL Server, like using blob state storage on SQL Server. That's just mean. That's not what SQL was for. You know, you're going through all of this ceremony to store a blob of data with an identifier just to pull it back out again. There are better stores than that.
We saw solutions that had telemetry in SQL Server.
Sure.
That's not a telemetry
that's
system.
That's not what it's for.
It's not telemetry data store.
And part of that, what I've talked to devs about, it's like, well, this is the store we had, so we used it. And it's interesting to just start thinking in terms of the new normal from a DBA perspective is there's going to be multiple kinds of storage, and that's okay. You know, you have the same responsibilities either way. How do you recover it? How do you back it up? How do you get it back online? You know, do you know where things are? That just your core governance, which you used to just do in a relational database, and now you do it in a variety of things.
And that's where we think that... what we worried about is that because of that need, there are so many different NoSQL stores.
Sure.
That gets very confusing very fast.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Unless you really know what Mongo and Cassandra and like which ones you should use when, etc. And of course, each of them will say that always use me.
Yeah.
That's where it gets confusing. And I think that's where the Cosmos DB adds enormous value because, okay, you're in the cloud. That is a database and it gives you the best from all, like, we had an opportunity to learn from all NoSQL systems.
Right.
And we incorporated all the best parts of all of them in the database server. So now if SQL doesn't, for some reason, SQL is not working for you.
You have this option and, or you care about that locality and that particular speed issues or, you know, any number of the things that are there. But, it's interesting that you've already started to consolidate. And at the same time, this platform as a service model. You're doing the updates. You're doing the maintenance. You're doing the backup strategies and so forth so that I can purely focus on taking care of my data. So yeah, it's a really interesting combination. Are you seeing existing projects migrate to this whole a fair bit, or is it more greenfield?
It's always existing projects.
Yeah.
It's very rare when you have a greenfield data system. Because there was a need at some point.
Yeah.
The data started accumulating. And now that solves the problems.
I guess how many people are actually starting acknowledging that Cosmos is going to be important to them? It's like you have to have the problem before you're like, well, how are we going to deal with this? Did you really want to build it? No. Can we buy it? Well, yes, we can. We can buy it by the transaction too.
Yes. Yeah, it's mostly migrating. And it comes from anywhere. Obviously, NoSQL appeared for a reason because of the problems with SQL systems has faced the problems that they were not designed for.
Sure.
So that's a common scenario. But also moving from existing MongoDB, Cassandra installations, and primarily for the fact that it's a fully managed service.
Yeah.
So taking the pain out of managing system, taking the pain out of the building distributed deployment of that system, taking the pain out of tuning and worrying about memory and CPU IO and
just having someone with a pair of eyes on it around the clock, right? Like I work with a few operations where they have a NOC that's, you know, staffed 24/7, but most don't. And you guys do.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not a small expense when you start thinking in terms of, yeah, we care about uptime that much that we actually need to have someone on call at all times. And somebody that's on those kinds of problems. But, you know, this is the cloudy world we live in now. I also like a lot of the stuff you're describing earlier on here, that it's not like as the DBA will have nothing to do, that Cosmos is simply taking everything off the table. You take a certain class of problems off the table, so that we can do some other things here now. Some more optimization, choosing what our relocations are. Like we can optimize performance and optimize for reliability just by twiddling some knobs or calling to some API.
We're lifting the abstraction level. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now you can really think about managing your data.
Right.
At a data abstraction level, as opposed to managing your nodes.
Right. Managing your infrastructure.
How many sockets you should have on this open.
Are you finding that for the most part, the apps got to live in Azure as well? How well is an on-premise app working against Cosmos DB going to behave?
I mean, it really depends on the browser is always executing on your laptop or on your phone.
Yeah.
So some part of your app is on-premise always.
You've got the customer piece calling to some server somewhere. I mean, it depends on what data center that is, calling to another data center.
Yes, yeah. It depends on your constraints and your latency preferences.
Yeah.
There is more, what we observe is that there's more and more, because there's more and more compute. At the end, there is more and more compute on devices.
Sure.
There is more and more richer clients in the world. It's not everything on a middle tier.
Yeah.
Cosmos DB offers the ability to call directly from the client.
Right.
In fact, we use it pretty heavily, even in the inside, like we offer portal.
So there's not support, a mid tier involved in this.
Yes.
Just calling straight.
Yeah.
So the client is grabbing data.
And the latencies are great. I mean, obviously you have to travel to the data center, but once because you're talking to the nearest region, you're seeing a lot of improvements. So it comes in both ways. A lot of the systems that we work with is the event-driven architectures.
Right.
Right. There is, like, for example, Asus or Jet.com. You have a set of events, let's say shopping cart events, etc., and they all go. And Cosmos DB gives you a queryable real-time event store.
Right.
And you can have all kinds of microservices that are listening on those events and do anything you want to them.
Right. That's almost Cosmos DB as a message queue that it stops landing. I mean, it's safe and secure, but now you could be, you have services hanging off that it can respond.
And you get richer queries.
Sure.
When you need them. Yes.
And you live in that particular. That's an interesting model that you could use that. It's more of the reactive concept.
Yeah. In which case, events are coming from all over the place.
Sure.
It's coming from devices. It's coming from on-premise, from wherever your event sources are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it varies.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's an interesting conversation when we talk about infrastructure around, do we want to use, because Azure offers a set of different kinds of message queues and things as well. And then part of that queue process may be going to a store with some event calls ahead of it. Or do you want to save it first, secure it, and then kick off processes that act against it?
Yep.
They're both valid architectures.
Yep.
Like, I don't have a problem with either one of those. It's more of a, you know, who's architecting and what are you thinking? And do you trust your messages? Like, do you know where they're going to be? I kind of like stuff landing in a store first and then deciding what you want to execute against it. And it's a blurry line between the architect, the developer, and the DBA these days when we start thinking in those terms.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah. Everybody has to kind of think about everything. What's coming next?
Well, there's a ton of innovations we can do in the distribution space, data distribution space. There is the, obviously, we want to, Cassandra API is in the preview. We want to finish.
we want to do a really good job.
And it's, you know, we don't, it's not a trivial problem to provide 100% wire compatibility for a protocol that was built for an existing system.
Yeah, you got it. Somebody's going to bring you an interesting Cassandra implementation at some point. It's going to be some challenges.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah, same was true for Mongo. Mongo is actually arguably even more complex.
Sure.
So it's a lot. It took us a while to.
Not that Mongo is really that complicated, but more people have implemented API, more things with it. So
And the data, the API, the data model with Mongo is. It's pretty complex. It's very, very flexible, which is why people like it.
Yeah.
The onus is on us to implement it. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. GeoSpeak, pushing the boundaries on the data scenarios, what type of data people want to store.
Is Cosmos showing up in every Azure data center, or are there only select ones? Like, how do you
go about that? It's a foundational service.
Okay.
By now, every SaaS product from Microsoft uses CosmosDB.
Oh, so you guys are your best dog fooders.
Skype.
Interesting.
All of them use CosmosDB. So and it's great for us because we can say that doesn't matter how real time, how.
Well, they've got to be tough customers for you too.
Exactly.
They know where you live, right?
Yes.
Are you out of Redmond?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's one of the strengths when Microsoft consumes its own products like that is that they will literally come to your door and say, hey, why is this doing this? And you get a better product as a consequence.
Yes. And they show like when something like Active Directory shows up and wants to use you.
Yeah.
That is the thing that is better always be there.
Yeah.
And the logins,
really
the logins
can't be down.
Yeah. Logins cannot be down.
It's kind of important.
It's yes.
And they also, you know, you talk about something that impacts the performance of everything.
Yes.
Authentication will bite you every time. If that's dragging, you know, it's as bad as DNS. You don't want that to be slow. So important piece of it. Well, Carol, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's really interesting to think about how you're using Cosmos DB internally as well, and gives us some confidence that pretty much nothing we could throw at it. You aren't doing worse to it right now.
We'll take care of you.
Yeah, for sure. Places folks should go for more information?
Yes, just look up Azure Cosmos DB using your favorite search engine.
Mm-hmm.
You can try it. We offer you free 7 days trial, no signups, no other subscription required.
Right.
Fully featured with geo distributions and all the bells and whistles. You can try us out, play without any commitment. And we have pretty good docs, I think. We're pretty proud of the job we've done. Take us for a spin.
Great. Carol Gabriel, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.